This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Kara Miller. As you heard earlier here on WGBH, the jury is currently deadlocked in the trial of former Treasurer Tim Cahill. His former aide, Scott Campbell, was found not guilty. So stay tuned to WGBH throughout the day for updates as the jury continues to deliberate about the fate of former Treasurer Cahill. So for now, we will get back to the holiday season, which Jared left us with. And you know this, if you've been out fighting the crowds at the mall this season, you may have noticed a small but important change: smartphones being slipped in and out of pockets quickly and quietly doing merchandise comparisons. There are now four times as many mobile phones in the world as there are landline phones. And 20% of those mobile phones are smartphones, and that number is growing all the time. So how do mobile phones alter the way we shop, where we choose to spend our money, and the way that we pay? Joining us are Jack Philbin, co-founder and CEO of Vibes, and Ben Sarin, VP of Marketing at Lidl. Thanks very much to both of you for being here.
Thank you, Kara.
Thank you, Kara.
So, Ben, I'm going to start with you. You know, we talked a little bit about this, and you said, in your view, mobile payments are still kind of in this embryonic stage. Why? Why is that? Why have they not taken off yet?
Well, it's funny. There's a friend of mine who's a partner at a VC firm locally, Nextview Ventures, and they have a running joke.
I should say
office.
A venture capital firm,
venture
right?
Capital
where
firm.
They invest in little companies.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And certainly mobile payments is a hot space for investment right now. They have a running joke in their office, and the joke is this. Wouldn't it be great if there was something in your pocket that would allow you to spend money anywhere, that was accepted ubiquitously, and that was tied to some loyalty programs? Well, the running joke, the punchline is that you have that. It's called a credit card. And the reality is that's a very frictionless process. When I go into a store and I use my American Express or my Visa card, it's a painless process. It takes less than 3 seconds for me to get an authorization back and for the merchant to get an authorization. And if it takes longer, I'm impatient. I'm already annoyed that it's taking longer. So unless mobile payments is going to make that process easier, more convenient for me, it's got a long way to go.
Jack Philbin from Vibes, in your view, where are we in terms of people actually using their cell phones to pay for things?
Well, I agree, and I think it's early, but the tide is coming. I mean, all the signs are there for just a sort of sea change, and I think the feature or the app or the payment that most people might be familiar with is, you know, Starbucks, who I think has done a great job sort of introducing this concept of using your phone to pay for items in a great fashion. I think their latest data is that they're, you know, averaging 2.1 million transactions a week, and they've done over $100 million in transactions. And, you know, just to be clear, it replaces the loyalty card. So if you have your Starbucks Gold card, you don't need to keep that in your wallet anymore. You just enter that number into your Starbucks app and you can scan your phone at the point of sale. And so, you know, there's lots of it doesn't happen fast enough for our impatient society these days. But when you take a step back and think about, you know, the pace of innovation when compared to 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, it is pretty remarkable and things are moving pretty quickly.
And Jack Philbin, how has Starbucks been able to convince people to, instead of taking out their wallet when they want their, you know, Mocha Grande, to take out their cell phone? I mean, how have they been able to be so successful where a lot of other companies have not been able to yet?
Yeah, and that's a great question. I think the really simple answer is that they made it very easy, you know, as a convenience factor. So it's one less thing that I have to have in my wallet. I'm probably not going to get, you know, rid of my credit cards anytime soon. But I certainly don't want a loyalty card, and this may vary for men and women, but I don't want 20 or 30 different physical loyalty cards in my wallet, or I'll end up having the well-referred to George Costanza wallet.
Right, exactly. The one that kind of, you know, gives you a backache.
It doesn't fit.
Right, exactly. So, Ben Saren, I wonder then, all right, if people are using their mobile phones for something this holiday season, mm-hmm. what is it that those phones are coming in handy for?
Mm. Good question. So, I mean, I think Jack pointed out the mobile wallet opportunity, which is interesting. And there is certainly some innovation happening. Boston is kind of a hub for exactly this, actually, the mobile wallet opportunity where you can store your credit cards and store your loyalty program cards, store your coupons within this one app. Pretty sexy stuff. We're starting to see Apple even innovating in this capacity. But you're starting to see certainly what's called showrooming, right? Where you take your phone, you walk into a retailer, and you know that you can get a better price perhaps somewhere online or at another retailer locally, and you have your phone open, you're looking at the price at Best Buy or another retailer, and you might be comparison shopping with your phone, and you might be prepared to actually walk out of that store and go somewhere else to buy that product.
So, you know, who in your is your sense is doing this? Is this mostly people under 30? Is it sort of the very young crowd starting something new? Who is actually using their phone to do that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so we actually, Lytle & Company, surveyed over 500 people to talk about their mobile payment spending patterns for the holiday season. And what we found was that actually almost one in four customers have shopped through their mobile devices. The reality is, though, they're not paying with their mobile devices. So 71% of these shoppers report having never actually used a merchant's mobile swiping technology like Square to buy something. So what we're seeing is some interest. There's sort of at the edge, there's innovation and there's some adoption. But, you know, the baby boomer demographic has the largest spending power in the economy, and they're not doing this stuff. Mm. So what we're seeing is it's younger than 30. People younger than 30 are doing this stuff. They're using their phones, but they're not paying with their phones yet. So it's still it's got a long way to go.
And Jack Philbin, I wonder what you're seeing. I have to say, several weeks ago, my husband and I decided, OK, we'll comparison shop this particular product that we were looking for. So we went into two different stores that were very near each other and just called each other on the phone and was like, yeah, it's five for $29.99 here. And the other person was like, well, it's four for $25. You know, and so we were comparison shopping that way. What, in your view, are people doing in terms of showrooming or using that mobile phone to inform their purchasing decisions?
Sure. Well, I think you could coin a new term, the tag team showrooming.
Yeah, exactly.
You and your husband. I think the term showrooming has really brought on broad meaning in retail and mobile marketing circles. And it's certainly a threat, and more so for, you know, some retailers in certain verticals. But, you know, our research shows that consumers are not using their phones in stores solely to showroom, but rather they're using their phones to look up information and feel confident about their purchase. And I think everything that you want to use your phone for is actually an opportunity for retailers to provide that information in a format that's, you know, easy to digest and is exactly the type of information that, you know, that shoppers want. So, you know, we commissioned a study of 1,000 consumers and basically found that 61% of all smartphone users consider themselves connected shoppers. And if you're thinking, you know, female, young, tech savvy, think again. It's really, it's almost a split down the middle, but we did find a majority are men, income levels are evenly distributed, and a third of them are actually over the age of 45. So this has become a tool. I always like to refer to the phone as an unbiased source of information. Like, you trust your phone much more than you do the sales clerk who comes up and says, may I help you today? You know, I think we're trained to say, oh, no, thanks, I'm just browsing. But at the same time, you know that you control the information you're going to go search for on your phone. And there's just an inherent, an inherent ability to want to use your phone because you're controlling that activity.
So then how worried does a Macy's or a Best Buy, or an Office Depot have to be that what you're really doing is coming into their store? We talk about this idea of showrooming. You're really coming into their store to try on their, you know, outfit and say, yep, this fits. I can get that on Amazon. Or, yep, now that I see this desk in person, I feel pretty good about it. Now I can really find where it's actually cheapest.
Right. And a lot of the big box retailers have announced, you know, price match guarantees, or if you can find it cheaper elsewhere and show proof of that, they'll match the price. And I think, you know, I think they need to do that. And hey, look, our survey, the data showed that 25% of people who dub themselves a showroom shopper actually did later purchase from a competitor, but it was actually a greater percentage, 29%, that purchased from the same store's website. So I think it's very, very important that you provide, you link the experience of your mobile app and your mobile web and any loyalty, messaging. If there's a mobile database that somebody has joined for those, those special deals or product updates and information, we always teach our clients, own the mobile environment, and you're at a much lower risk of, seeing them go elsewhere.
Ben Saren from Lidl, how worried do you think the Macy's and, the Sears and the Best Buys have to be about that person who comes in? And they might physically be there, but on the web, they can be in a million different places checking out, so-and-so has it in this color and they have it for $5 less and that kind of thing.
I mean, I think they're worried. I think they have to innovate. The big problem here is they have to provide, I think, as Jack pointed out, a compelling user experience for consumers. Time and again, we have found mobile apps, retail store, even e-commerce application web apps are still cumbersome. They're still hard to use. And there's a limited amount of real estate on an iPhone or on an Android. They have to innovate. And I think the reality is, the money is moving online. The money is moving towards e-commerce. So if they're not innovating and they're not there, then they should be worried.
Now, you've also said that there are some interesting innovations coming from, let's say, credit card companies that now when you go to a place physically can track you with your cell phone and say, oh, hey, we'll give you a coupon. That's if you're at this place. How is that working with credit cards? What kinds of things are they offering people? And where do you see that going?
Yeah, there's a lot of innovation. And again, I want to point out that Boston is truly a nucleus of innovation happening in the States around mobile technology, mobile payments, mobile loyalty programs, mobile wallets. But the big credit cards are doing stuff too. A good example of that would be American Express Sync. And I don't know the URL, but if you just Google American Express Sync, you can connect that American Express account of yours to your Twitter experience, your Facebook experience, and your Foursquare experience. And what that yields is an experience that if I go to, say, Fenway Park, this is probably not the most ideal scenario, but you go to Fenway Park, you check in, I'm at a Red Sox game, and when you check in, American Express is going to say, hey, get $2 off at the souvenir store off an MLB, authorized, piece of apparel, a hat or something, $2 off, and if you tweet it out, we'll give you an extra dollar off. So that's a pretty powerful experience for the merchant, the credit card brand, and the consumer. So we're starting to see stuff there. On the other end, and on the upstart scene with startups here in Boston, we're seeing some very interesting stuff with companies like Level Up is a good example, where if you go to a local retailer, a barbershop, and you pay with your Level Up application, then there's loyalty to be or benefits to be yielded from that experience. You accrue points, you accrue dollars, and that's incremental value that's realized by the consumer and by the merchant. So there's a lot of exciting stuff happening, and it's not just Level Up. There's a number of other providers locally here that are doing some exciting stuff, and everyone's kind of trying to solve a number of problems from a variety of angles. Kind of feels like a little bit to me, Kara, like it's a problem. It's a solution that's looking for a problem. So I think we've yet to see this has to. The credit card companies have yet to really make any big moves here. Visa's doing stuff with V.me. I encourage people to check that out. It's still very new and it's not completely rolled out yet. So the question is, when are the big credit card brands going to drop their foot? And could they stomp out some of the competition that's happening in the startup scene?
And we've talked to Level Up here on WGBH about those mobile payments. Jack Philbin at Vibes, I wonder, do you think that credit card companies are worried that as people get smartphones increasingly, and sure, it may only be 20% of people now, but you look at those charts of landline phones versus mobile phones, and it's amazing, for so long, it looks like, we're never going to eclipse landline phones. And then all of a sudden we do. And now we've got five times as many mobile phones in the world as landline phones. Do you think credit card companies are worried we may be in danger of being eclipsed by a mobile wallet?
Well, I think just as Ben referred to the retailers need to innovate, I think the credit card companies feel that same pressure. You have Square out sort of undercutting them on price and making it very convenient for people to use their iPhone to, swipe payment.
And explain what Square is for somebody who's never seen it before. I mean, they know what an iPhone is, but what is Square?
Think of Square as the ability to purchase an attachment that you plug into your to the audio jack in your iPhone, and it uses the internet to process the payment as opposed to the credit card network. And so in Chicago, I'm seeing tons of taxi drivers prefer to use Square, which can immediately email or text the the person who took the taxi a receipt. So it's convenient. Ultimately it costs them less, so it eats into their margin less.
And Apple, for example, wants a piece of this, right? They have an Apple wallet. Yeah, to talk about
for
that.
For sure. So, Apple released Passbook with its new iOS 6. And, at Vibes, we think of Passbook as the leather, not the plastic, meaning it's the wallet used to organize, not pay for items. Okay, it's not the transaction. It's just to help you, helps the connected shopper really keep track of various passes. And the passes are coupons, loyalty cards, tickets, boarding passes, or gift cards. And, one of the really cool features about Passbook is that it's location aware, which means that if you've downloaded your boarding pass, when you get near the airport, it will come up on your lock screen so that you don't have to, think of if you've ever used a mobile boarding pass before. You have to unlock your phone, at least with an iPhone. You unlock your phone, you scroll to the app, you click through, you perhaps download the boarding pass, and then you have it after, say, 4 or 5 taps or clicks, if you will. And with Passbook, because it's location aware, you show up near the airport, it pops up, it's on your lock screen, and it's just literally one swipe. And so, for retailers, you can input up to, 10 of your favorite locations for any specific retail pass, whether that be a loyalty card or just a coupon for that retailer. And when you get near those locations, it subtly pops up to remind you that, hey, you can take advantage of this special while you're nearby. As soon as you drive away, it disappears off the home screen of your phone.
I'm Kara Miller. This is WGBH Boston Public Radio, and we're talking about mobile shopping, mobile wallets with Jack Philbin, co-founder and CEO of Vibes, and Ben Saren, VP of Marketing at Lidl. And I want to ask you both this, but Jack Philbin, I'll start with you. When you look at the question of who's going to have your financial information, right? Who has this mobile wallet, the credit cards, the fact that you have a rewards card at Sephora and at Best Buy, right? And they know all these things about you. I would think, and Jack Philbin, I'll ask you first, I would think that Apple and Google and American Express, they would all be so hungry for that kind of information about individual consumers.
Absolutely. There's a lot of talk about big data, and I think everybody realizes that the real power going forward is in who owns the data. There's been I think that might be one of the things that's actually held Google Wallet back, is that the big retailers are like, all right, if we sort of buy into this and re-outfit all of our POS systems, is Google going to have access to all that data? And so there's a carrier consortium called ISIS with the mobile operators, trying to get in on this. And then there's a lot of big data companies. And at the same time, the retailers, the brands, don't want to let go of that data, and they want to mine it for their own advantage and hang on to that that single asset, and keep it to themselves.
Ben Saren.
So all this mobile payment stuff, mobile wallets, it really is exciting. There's a lot of money flooding there. There's a lot of startups around it. And look, some of the fundamentals of business, every good business, every good product or every good service has to do one single thing really well. It has to solve a problem, right? Or in fancy business speak, it has to address a pain point. And it's clear that there really isn't a clear pain point to be addressed here. There's no clear problem. There's a lot of different solutions for kind of half problems, right? But what I like about where you're going with this in terms of the data available, we call that payments intelligence. And what that allows you to do, what's really sexy about this, the holy grail for any business is to know your customer. And in what is inherently now a digital economy, a faceless transaction, it's so important to know your customer. So this idea of payments intelligence can help a business not just know their customer, but extend customer lifetime value, extend the relationship with their customer, and perhaps become more profitable with those customers. That to me is the holy grail. And so I believe kind of all this stuff around payments, all the new innovation here is kind of heading that direction. And that's what's exciting to me. It's the marketing component of all of this, not just the consumer behavior of being able to make a payment with my phone, but it's everything else. The question is, how does that value the consumer? That's the other side of the equation here that we've yet to really figure out.
Yeah, the effort to be able to understand that person who's walking into your store, their proclivities, what they purchased before. Kind of thing.
Right.
Let me ask you a couple more things about your study at LIDL, which I thought were interesting, at least in terms of what's going on right now. And one of those two things I thought was particularly interesting is that people, and maybe it's because of the recession, really want to pay now rather than pay later, which has been sort of a typical way of buying gifts in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you see there?
Well, almost 50% of the consumers that we surveyed have three or more credit cards. And 53% of those people plan to tap actually available funds. So using debit cards or using checks or even using cash as opposed to the credit cards. So clearly, and you know, I have a theory here that, you know, I think through the recent recession and the, you know, global economic collapse, that it's still very fresh in people's mind here. You don't want to build more debt, right? You want to eliminate as much debt. And, you know, media has been very good about trying to get that message out to consumers, lower your debt. So I think people are more likely to spend with cash, debit cards, checks. At the same time, though, those who do want to use credit cards are more likely to use them to actually for the rewards, for the points, for the benefits of having those credit
and
cards.
And you say it's richer people
that
tend to want to use – that's what you're finding, which – you know, is a little bit of the reverse of what we might think, but that it's richer people right now who are opting to use credit cards.
More affluent people are more likely to realize the benefits of having that American Express Platinum card or whatever card it is, and they're also more choosy about which credit card they want to use. So they're slightly more aware of which credit card they're going to use at which merchant. So there's a kind of a hyper awareness there, and they know that if I use this credit card at this merchant, I'm going to get more points and more rewards for an airfare ticket, which is pretty interesting stuff. So yeah, they're much more aware, and that's clear.
Jack Philbin, what are you seeing in terms of the advantage to the consumer? We're talking about this of using cash or using a credit card versus the advantage to the Apple, the Google of owning your information.
Well, I think building upon what Ben talked about with payments intelligence, I think the advantage lies in using data to inform how you engage with the consumer, right? So using data to inform the relationship management. There's lots of different versions or different slices of CRM businesses. We call it mobile relationship management, and you're really trying to get as much data as possible to present the best offer, the most compelling engagement, you know, the most compelling experience for that consumer as they go down their path to purchase, right? We think about mobile is the closest you can get to your customer. And so what are you going to present them with? And that means different experiences for different people. And so when you go down that path to purchase, right, from awareness to getting, you know, engaged to the transaction and then to repeat buying with loyalty, you want to make sure that you're personalizing that as much as possible. So the more that people are purchasing, with Passbook and Ben had mentioned Level Up. There's a company in Chicago here called Belly. The more that you're creating these personal experiences, the better it's going to be for you in the future. You could either earn points or let's just say that the retailer learns more about you. You're earning loyalty points within their specific program and you're getting better offers, you know, very similar to the classic sort of airline miles.
And Ben Sarin, final comment from you. Yeah, go ahead.
Let's look at what Groupon is doing right now. It's very exciting. Groupon obviously had a lot of media attention over the last couple of years. They went public and things haven't worked out so well. They recently rolled out some pretty exciting new stuff. So what they've said is, hey, look, if you use Groupon, Mr. Merchant, if you use Groupon to do your marketing with us, we'll do your credit card processing and we'll actually give you ridiculously low fees. But you have to do your marketing through us.
And that is one of the things that, you know, the credit card companies do charge this fee to retailers, and they very often don't want to pay it.
That's exactly right. Credit card processors, the associations, there's a whole range of fees that accompany credit card processing. It's a cumbersome process. Now, the reality is most people within an organization, the people who decide to choose a credit card processor are typically the CFO, right? The financial services part of the organization. And they're looking at just doing it as inexpensively as possible. Well, for the first time now, credit card processing is, there's a different dialogue happening within these organizations now, whether it's these big e-commerce companies or whether it's big retail organizations or small merchants. What they're saying is, you know, we have an opportunity here to actually use the data that we're gleaning through these payments with our processor and through our own data to better know our customer. So there's really a whole other ecosystem that's starting to kind of take shape here. It's really exciting.
Yeah, the battle for your money, the battle for your wallet. We've been talking about mobile phones and how the way they change the way that we shop and the way that we spend money. And I've been speaking with Jack Philbin, CEO and co-founder of Vibes from Chicago, and Ben Saren, Vice President of Marketing at Lidl. Thanks to both of you for joining. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kara.
Well, even though the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq are winding down, the Pentagon is facing a new battle. Military women have sued the Department of Defense for excluding women from combat. Callie Crossley will be bringing you that story. I'm Kara Miller, and you're listening to Boston Public Radio.